You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Gary Leonard joined in the studio today with David Forbes, editor of the Asheville Blade. David, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
This segment is something that we call the City Council Report, in which we recap the most recent City Council meetings. And in fact, today we're going to be covering two meetings. We're going to be covering both last night's City Council meeting as well as the one from 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
So let's go ahead and dive into it. David, specifically around Tuesday night's City Council meeting, which proved to be a pretty contentious meeting.
Good Lord,
So let's go ahead and start there in terms of some of the highlights of what emerged from that meeting.
So council is knee-deep in probably the biggest decision it makes all year, which is the city budget.
Budget, right.
And in this case, it's over $160 million. Covers everything from, you know, policing to transit. You name it, the city budget probably deals with it in some fashion. And because, you know, a lot of big matters council deals with don't come down to like one single vote per item. They're, you know, this huge budget that gets passed in late May, early June usually. And this season, you've seen a lot more public involvement. I think because a lot of issues around de facto segregation, around gentrification, around poverty here have kind of increased in their impact. You know, we're now rated the second most gentrified city in the country.
Yeah. Second to Charleston.
Yeah. Second to Charleston. Yeah, exactly. And ahead of, you know, cities we think of as having even worse gentrification problems sometimes. A lot of people feel in the crunch of that, especially with how low Asheville's wages are and how segregated a city it remains. So I think that's added kind of a background of tension.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we saw this last council election about 2 years ago, and there's another election going on now. You're definitely seeing, like, I think less trust than previously in kind of city institutions, especially by more marginalized communities, especially by people hit harder by gentrification. And that's definitely coming out. And some of this is reflective of national trends, see with things like Black Lives Matter and a lot of organizing in the wake of Trump's election.
Yeah.
And some of it is very local stuff on the ground that's also been playing out for, you know, a decade or more in many cases.
Absolutely.
And it kind of all has started to really culminate in this budget process, which is not how this typically goes. It's usually kind of thing wonks follow. But you're seeing a lot more people weigh in on kind of where they think the city's direction should go and how that relates to like where the money's going.
Absolutely. And again, for the listeners, just for kind of contextualizing purposes,
certainly,
this is going to be the budget for the next fiscal year, which begins July 1. So again, we're already in mid-April. So this is a really late crunch in terms of kind of teasing out what is going to be the finite budget for next year.
So this actually, that's a good point. At the same time, this actually has the politics in the start earlier. You saw a lot of this, you know, kind of discontent around some parts, especially around a lot of it has kind of, you know, honed in on this proposed expansion for policing
in
downtown, which is very controversial.
Very controversial.
And the money around that. But it's also, you know, there's seen stuff on transit, you've seen stuff on energy programs, you've seen stuff on what the property taxes are going to look like, where the bond money is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually a lot of stuff going on. And these debates have been going on since January.
Right.
You know, the earliest kind of stuff started then. And this is actually about where council's usual schedule kind of maps out. They really start kind of defining what they want staff to give them around this time. And there's a public hearing in May. And then after that, you'll see them take an up or down vote on whether to pass the budget. And at that point, especially this year, you might see some proposals for amendments come forward.
And let's just dive into it, David, in terms of you alluded to this with Asheville Police Department and their request for a very specific amount of money. And, you know, there has been a lot of pushback from the community and different nonprofits in terms of how difficult that would be in terms of specifically communities of color. But I think for the listeners out there, it's worth kind of giving a little context as far as what happened over the summer, you know, with the shooting of Jerry Williams and kind of leading up to the lack of transparency that really took place throughout this entire process and the lack of trust that you alluded to that's already there and where we are now in terms of what is being asked.
So this is one of those issues, and I call them iceberg issues occasionally because there's, you know, a lot of stuff right above the surface. Mm-hmm. There's way more going back decades even below kind of the waterline on this issue. So Asheville is a de facto segregated city. That is a matter of fact. It's been well documented by a project like the State of Black Asheville and, you know, tons and tons of research on this. Redlining hit really hard here. Segregation hit really hard here. The fact that Asheville is generally a city with a massive poverty problem, While that cuts across a lot of racial lines, it obviously hits communities of color the hardest.
Seeing a decrease of, of people of color every year.
Yes, as gentrification increases.
Displacement.
So there has been issues of trust with the Asheville Police Department for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
And when Jerry Williams was shot and killed by an APD sergeant, Tyler Radford, last summer, you saw a lot of those issues kind of erupt to the surface. This was not the first time there had been a shooting with a lot of people in the community questioning the circumstances it had taken place under. You know, I wrote an article at the time about the issue and, you know, delving into why was there this immediate reaction of skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the issues that affect, you know, communities across the country, along lines with racism and police disparities and things like that, Asheville has a number of specific issues. And so there have been a number of cases where, A.J. Marion, who was shot and killed a number of years ago, and there was not really much information released about why that was done.
Right.
So there were, there are disparities as have been documented really recently. According to the APD's own statistics, there are fairly significant racial traffic stop disparities. There have been reforms proposed to local NAACP. So there's a real basis to this distrust. It's been a controversy under multiple police chiefs. So that didn't stop with the controversy around Williams' killing. It continued. There was a clampdown on protesters, which went against a much more kind of nuanced and light-handed policy the APD had taken for about 6-7 years. You saw people being arrested after the fact. You saw warrants put out and they weren't informed of it. In one case, a city board member was not informed they had a warrant out. And so that means they can be arrested at any time. You saw the deputy chief, Jim Baumstark, give an account of the events of those protests, which was either a lie or about the time events that he said took place in the morning, which provably took place in the evening. It was either a lie or demonstration of investigation that lacked the basic competence to determine when something happened, which is kind of an essential thing in police work.
Yes.
So that clampdown obviously had a lot of also kind of further tension. And then you had there was a question about the officer named Shale Noza, who was caught in video throwing a teenager in Hillcrest to the ground in September.
A 16-year-old girl.
Yeah, exactly. And then again, caught with an AR-15, threatening to arrest teenagers, one of whom turned out to have a BB gun in Montford.
Yeah.
When pressed on that issue, Hooper's defense was that, you know, there's violence in housing projects, and thus him having – that didn't go over well with this AR-15, you know, to arrest a bunch of teenagers. The BB gun was somehow justified.
Yeah.
That didn't go over well with a lot of people, and it is frankly, speaking to someone who's covered the APD for a while, it is kind of ridiculous. And it is – I've seen – APD respond to calls with adults where there was, you know, a possibility of one of them being armed and no one pulled out an AR-15.
Right. And all of those issues culminating into where we are right now.
Yeah. So there's this, you know, there's this environment. So when in January, after Hooper proposed that, said she needed a $1 million increase for 15 more officers for the downtown unit, expand the downtown unit, which would create a new policing district. There are three right now to create a new district, ironically named David, for, you know, kind of something that kind of surprised me. I think the current ones are like Adam, Baker, and Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
So create this new district, significant increase in funding. And this got a big backlash, and it's continuing to get a big backlash. It collided with that distrust. It collided with the feeling this is going to enforce gentrification further. It collided with the push for reform from organizations that, you know, like the NAACP, like the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, that,
right,
you know, are kind of have dealt with a lot of police reform stuff before. And
because at its core, what we're talking about is institutional structural racism.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's kind of where all this collided. And basically, the assertions from the opponents of this increase are twofold. One is they don't think that it's those opponents have ranged from left-wing organizations to nonprofits that deal with homelessness to council candidates to it's kind of a gamut of people.
Yeah, and just community members who are
including some downtown business owners who are like, hey, we need parking.
Totally.
Yeah, more police is not really a priority for me.
Right.
So you do kind of have this range of opinion on it, and that you saw that really start to culminate last night. But it's been an issue for months now. Mm-hmm. There's a twofold kind of assertion from the opponents. Where Hooper says, look, there's been this increase in crime downtown. We're having more people than ever come in. We need, spending way too much overtime. We need, more police downtown.
Which I think I saw a statistic recently that said the increase in crime has been less than 1%.
So citywide, the increase in crime last year was 1%. And that's actually one of the arguments used by the opponents. They're like, look, there's no way this is justified.
Right.
And that is, the opponents all say, look, given the massive documented disparities, that you have nonprofits and civil rights groups who have really looked at this issue saying, you already have major issues you need to correct. Given the history of distrust and controversy that's happened during the past year, we frankly don't trust you. We think that this will be used to, until we see a massive change of the party, this will just be used to make things worse mm-hmm. for a lot of people who are already pretty marginalized in this town. That's part one. We don't trust you with this cash. We don't trust you with this expanded power. It will make things worse for mm-hmm. people it's already pretty bad for in this city. The second part is basically that, look, because things are getting so bad for people in the city, $1 million could be better spent on practically anything else, especially anything to do with like housing, social services.
Right.
This is not just a debate that's going on at the city level, should be noted. There was recently $500,000 that the county commissioners were going to put towards a jail expansion. And after a lot of pressure from the public, including from State of Black Asheville, they put this towards social services and community diversion programs.
Yeah.
So these issues are kind of coming up at multiple levels of government.
Absolutely.
Now, notably, that's a one-time expenditure. That $500,000 would be for building something instead of putting these – to fund these programs a little more. But that vote was unanimous. So you see this pressure kind of cutting across from the usual political lines. Just like in council, you're seeing people who claim to be progressives, though I think obviously the opponents of this move would debate that, that political moniker, saying that, we need expanded policing.
Yeah.
And some others say, no, we don't. This is this might be better spent elsewhere. But the $1 million would be per year.
Wow.
So this would be a recurring expense. There's some one-time expense associated with it as well for buying vehicles,
sure.
things like that.
Sure, sure, sure.
But this would largely be a year-by-year expense.
So, David, for the listeners who weren't able to attend the Tuesday City Council meeting, including myself, with the amount of pushback that the community gave towards this funding of the police department, how did City Council receive that?
This was really interesting. It's kind of been this, this back and forth. You saw a lot of criticism over this start to emerge in February.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the opponents have been to council meetings, but they've also been to meetings and they've been to a lot of the budget sessions. And one, as a matter of fact, they packed one budget session to a degree that they've now been moved to a larger room.
Yeah.
But this – where this kind of really started to emerge from that point, there was, I think, kind of an expectation, or when that started to emerge, there was kind of the expectation that you'd see, Chief Hooper make the rounds to, say, the Public Safety Committee, which is the council committee that oversees, kind of police and public safety issues, mm-hmm. probably the Citizens Police Advisory Committee, which also is supposed to kind of weigh in these policy matters. And she didn't show up and present either. She's supposed to present it at CPAC next month. And that's kind of been an issue of real criticism, too, is that some of the opponents said, look, the chief won't even show up to defend her own policies. She's having closed-door meetings with city officials or with, local business groups. The Downtown Association did actually endorse this change, this $1 million. And that's kind of where her focus is. She's not willing to respond to the public. That's actually been a criticism of Hooper since about last summer, is that she's not a very transparent police chief, that she's not willing to straight up defend her ideas in public against criticism, and that she's pretty thin-skinned about it. And, honestly, I think having covered and analyzed the protest clampdown, there's definitely some truth to that, whether it's simply playing out in this case or not. But certainly there were meetings where, even just as a journalist, I would have expected, okay, presentation, criticism,
right.
council weigh in. Again, presentation, criticism, the board, police commission weighs in. Some members may like it, some members may not. And that didn't really happen.
Yeah.
There was Hooper mentioned this $1 million in the presentation in late January, where she was given kind of an overall update on crime in the city. And even then, it wasn't just the focus. She mentioned it. There was a little bit of feedback from council. She did actually come forward and justify it again this time at the budget session that happened before the main meeting. There she said, look, Asheville has policing needs that are higher than most cities. We have this huge daytime population rush that comes in. We already have a bunch of overtime. We really need, this expansion to deal with the many, many issues from just more population activity in the downtown area. Mm-hmm. So that's what she said, at least.
Well, David, to
council basically sided with her, but it was dead clear there was a big split.
Wow. To cut to the chase in terms of where the money is being allocated outside of what has been presented and brought forth, where exactly is the $1 million being spent specifically on more officers, or is it spent on training, or is it being spent on, like, you know, more equipment, more gear?
All
like,
of the above.
Yeah.
You know, so this – and that's actually important to note and elaborate for the listeners. When – you know, we say this $1 million goes towards, you know, expanding this police unit. That means equipment. It means vehicles. Sure. It means training. Hooper said this will be a 2-year process to get all these officers fully trained and on board. And it means, you know, the money, obviously, to pay those officers. Mm-hmm. So the $1 million is, you know, and but yeah, when someone says it's $1 million to expand policing, they mean all of the above, because that's what's required to have a larger police unit in downtown. So that's kind of what's at stake here. And council is pretty split on it. Councilor Brian Haynes wrote a statement saying he straight out does not think this is the right way to go. The money needs to be used for social programs. One of the most – but it looks like a majority, maybe a 4-3 majority. It was kind of hard to tell. A frustrating aspect of council budget sessions is that they don't have up or down votes. Mm-hmm. They don't even raise their hands. They give what is kind of informal, weird thing called nods, where, you know, 4 councilors kind of nod that something you go forward, it goes into the budget. Now, then they formally vote in that budget later. They have to. Mm-hmm. But it makes it kind of hard to follow sometimes who exactly is opposing something unless they make a definitive statement for or against.
Sure.
On the pro side, you had Councilor Gordon Smith, who said that he felt that a unfortunate side effect of, you know, of the movements like Black Lives Matter was he felt police officers had been too criticized. He thought the APD and Hooper actually did a pretty good job in general. He said Hooper was the best police chief he's seen. Obviously, you know, Hooper's a very controversial figure, and this apparently is the other side of the controversy. Smith is apparently fine with her actions so far. Mm. And he said that he felt it was a false dichotomy. It was not either or question whether, you know, money goes to services or money goes to the police. Mm-hmm. To some degree, as a journalist, I have to say budgets are finite.
Yeah.
Cities make decisions about where to put resources. And it is – I don't like it as a matter of civic discussion when people pretend it's otherwise. Mm-hmm. In the same discussion, we saw some council members say, look, this is – you know, we are cash strapped in some areas. We have real limitations on the amount of revenue we bring in. We have real limitations and challenges, which are all true depending on how you think they should resolve those challenges or not. But then say, hey, this is – you know, this isn't a false dichotomy. You know, whatever side of this issue a person might agree with the specific proposal and its opponents, money gets spent one area, doesn't get spent another area. That is a brutal fact.
Sure.
So just as a reporter, I don't like those facts being overwritten. I think it's a bad thing for the civic culture. And he also said that, you know, he felt social services, you know, the city should spend more money on housing than ever as before due to the bond funds that were voted for. And those are one-time funds, it should be noted. They're not this recurring amount.
Right.
And which is a big difference that he said he felt and this probably got the most visible reaction from a fair amount of the audience, the opponents that were there, that, you know, social services are largely the county's responsibility, not the city's. And there were some like vocal noises of derision when he said that. So not usually the sort of thing you hear in a city budget session. It appears that, you know, there are 3 council members along with Haynes, appears Cecil Bothwell and Keith Younger, reasonably sympathetic towards the demands of the opponents. As I said, there wasn't a formal vote, so it's kind of hard to tell.
When does that formal vote happen?
The formal vote will be late May, early June, usually. Sometimes it depends on what happens at the state level, you know, where the city kind of comes down on stuff where the state comes down on things that might affect the city's revenue.
Yeah. Well, this is certainly not the last time that we're going to be hearing about this budget, but I do want to switch gears in terms of Tuesday city council meeting. There was another issue that came up regarding the redistricting. Are you able to paint a little bit of a picture in terms of how that came about, came down the pike from the state level, and then in terms of the poll and what that reflected?
Sure. This is, to be honest, the city put out a poll, you know, basically, do you want districts or do you want the kind of type? And really, the results are kind of all over the place. And this is in one can, they seem to indicate a lot of Asheville-ians are fine with the current system. It's actually bolstered something I've seen, which is as the state has tried to play a district system, it's perceived to be tied to Republican gerrymandering.
Yeah.
I think it has actually kind of shored up support where a lot of locals were lukewarm on what kind of local electoral system we have before then.
Yeah.
So it's associated with kind of this thing that's unpopular among a lot of Asheville. At the same time, some polls said that the poll also said that if a certain, you know, if there were, it were proposed that the system change, people might vote for that. It's really all over the place. I don't think, frankly, it says a whole lot. You know, I think that this the how elections are constructed, while very important, is such a Byzantine and locally dependent question that a lot of it depends on circumstances.
Well said.
So, but council did feel they need to move towards putting some sort of referendum on the ballot. A lot of it depends on whether this bill to gerrymander the city or force them to do districts. The circumstances of it, if it gets through the state legislature, if it goes to court, because the previous plans to do that in places like Wake County, Greensboro, been struck down.
Yeah, yeah.
Under very similar grounds to what the bill targeting Asheville seems to have. So really, this is kind of a we're going to wait and see. They opted for a referendum. But yeah, really, it's interesting because I think going in, a lot of observers, including myself, thought that might be the main thing at the meeting. Actually didn't turn out to be that.
Interesting.
It turned out to be this matter of funding and where it goes.
Yeah. Anything else from last night's or Tuesday city council meeting before we time warp into 2 weeks ago?
Sure. Some really important issues. And it ties what we talked about earlier, but it's kind of separate. There were a number of people, including Don Chavez from Greenworks. Dewan Little is active with a number of nonprofits. Libby Kyle is a school teacher who's also active, who criticized the city for what they viewed as disrespectful remarks made at an earlier kind of work session, not one I was at, by Councilor Julie Mayfield, which they thought were dismissive towards the request of these nonprofits. Mayfield apologized, said that, you know, her comments in retrospect were dismissive, more dismissive than they should have been. She should have had a better idea of what these nonprofits did. So, you know, take that as you will. There's clearly some real tension there. But this tied in with the policing issue because in the consent agenda where the city signs off and it's funding for outside groups for the year, which they're trying to push to get up, I think, about 200K, people point out, look, you know, you have us fighting over this tiny pot of money, group against group, for these, you know, very underserved communities.
Absolutely.
And you're about to put $1 million more towards the police department, which is many times what, you know, the entire budget for this is.
Yeah.
You saw, you know, everyone from Nicole Townsend's local poet and organizer just did the Existing While Black event a few years ago, harshly criticize council, say that, you know, they were furthering structural racism, they were ignoring the needs of Black Asheville. And very, you know, condemned in very sharp terms. Little and Kyle also spoke and said, look, like we're seeing, you know, Little specifically said, look, I see racial profiling go on directly. I've seen, you know, six police officers to deal with one 13-year-old Black teenager. That's ridiculous.
Yep.
And that and so you kind of see these two issues kind of colliding, whereas people involved in these nonprofits are personally saying, look, you know, you've got your priorities wrong.
Yeah.
And we have real concerns about the level of disparities involved here too. This issue's not going away, you know, and so I think you're going to see both the nonprofit funding issue and its ties to the, you know, to the police expansion. I think you're going to see that go down until the vote on the budget.
Totally.
This will be the most contentious budget year I've probably seen in 10 years of covering city council.
Wow. Well, let's go ahead and switch gears here, David, since we're covering...
a less decisive meeting. Yeah. It's hard to top that one.
Right.
Yeah.
So nice, this meeting, that we're going to do it twice. So we're going to go back to March 28th, the city council meeting, kind of just a quick overview in terms of what took place at that meeting.
Certainly. So that meeting was kind of I titled the article, which just went up on the Asheville Blade yesterday. So the HB 2.0 thing, which I also wrote a column on, I encourage people to read, kind of shuffle the schedule around, which is a hash of the news business. But a lot of what happened there was kind of a move things down the road. It's actually the title of pieces, Down the Road. You saw a lot of things kind of advance, for good or for ill, depending on who you ask. And the major issues were really the fate of the, quote, Pit of Despair, which is the property across the Basilica. There's a city task force that completed its work on that. But the task force was specifically mandated not to answer some very big questions, like, you know, who's going to own that? Who should own that property? That should be public, or should it, you know, be a private developer, maybe, but with some conditions about what they have to build there? Should it be housing? Should it be a park? Should it be some kind of combination of commercial and park and housing space? If it's a park, what kind of park? Should it be a plaza or green space or what have you? Big contentious issue last election. And really, it's not just about this piece of space, because it never is. Just like it's not just about that $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this issue brought in feelings of a disappearance of public space, especially people that aren't wealthy downtown, a lot of benches and gone away. And it brought in concerns about, you know, how favorable is city staff and council towards developers, the lack of green space perceived in some areas in downtown. So really, there's a lot of complicated issues just below the surface here. This task force did not have an easy job. It was 17 people, 14 from various organizations, 3 from the city, appointed by the city. And they labored for about a year.
Yeah.
According to their chair, Andrew Fletcher, and a lot of the other members, they do think that they said, look, there is some real commitment to public space. People do want some other activities there. But the exact breakdown of that remains to be seen. That's really where this is going to get controversial again. Yeah. Council couldn't agree whether it should be mostly public space or should be sold off to a developer, even with a lot of constraints on it. We're heading into another election. It's going to be big again.
Right. I mean, this Basilica property, also known as a Bit of Despair, was a massive issue 2 years ago.
Yes.
And it looks like it is yet again going to be another big issue.
It is. What council did agree on, unanimously, I should add, was hiring a designer.
Yeah.
So you are... Again, when this becomes a little definite, when designer says, hey, here's plans 1 through 3 or 5 or whatever, you're going to really start to see people say, oh, well, I hate plans 1 and 2, but 3 sounds good. And people say, well, 3's stupid. Let's go for 1 or 2. So and that this is going to reopen all of that.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen like how much this committee's work, because it's a controversial issue, the intentional decision to keep out some of the big decisions off that committee's plate, kind of where they come home to roost.
And this interview that we conduct is specific about city council meetings, but it is really worth noting that there was a very vocal city council member that opposed kind of the what was brought forth from this committee.
So yeah, and as a matter of fact, that was Cecil Bothwell, who's been a big proponent of a green space or a park there. He said he didn't feel it really moved anything along because of these constraints was operating under. Yeah. He called in an email to Fletcher, the chair of the committee, and Chris Joyelle was with Astral Design Center, kind of helping this, advising this process, called a pile of crap.
Yeah.
There's a whole kind of kerfuffle about that. Despite all that going into this meeting in late March, you didn't see a huge amount of that on the dais that night. Bothwell agreed to move this forward along with everyone else. He's since written, an op-ed in the Citizen Times saying he does think a green space is very viable. They will keep pressing for that. But a lot of stuff is going to come down to how the elections go, what this designer presents. And that kind of was the tenor of the meeting.
Yeah.
In the pre-budget session, because they had one then, just like they had one at last night's meeting, they delved into transit, which is facing a lot of different constraints, but also a lot of pressures for expanded service. You might see a push. The city manager hinted pretty strongly you're going to see a push to raise bus fees, which, of course, it's a lot of really kind of low-income and working-class populations. Hugely controversial issue there. That system has had a lot of criticisms from rider advocates and the drivers' union about what they say is mismanagement and inattention from city staff that has caused some problems to mount. So, again, like, this discussion has moved along. And at last night's meeting, they did say, hey, we're fine with, kind of a minor uptick in property tax to really help fund some of the transit stuff. But, there's a lot of need there.
Absolutely.
And so expect that to, kind of be keep moving forward or not. But like the controversy is not going anywhere. So the energy initiatives, which they also said a little bit last night, some real debates over should the city fund, weatherization for low-income homes, cut down on power usage, cut down their bills. But a lot of debate there over, how much social services should the city back, some real divisions there. Mannheimer and Vice Mayor Gwen Whistler were kind of lukewarm on that. Councilmember Keith Young was very ardent that we really need to support low-income families. But that kind of moved along too. Same thing with as it did last night. A lot of that is not quite definite yet.
Gotcha.
And then you saw a property owner ask for short-term rentals, which are banned in most parts of the city. And they were kind of turned down on that, but it was a 3-3 vote. So council still clearly split on that issue as well. Yeah, tie vote. And if something hits a tie vote, it fails.
Yeah.
The motion fails. Yep. If it's a tie vote, it has to have at least a one vote majority.
David, so much to talk about here.
This is really, this is a lot to try to cover.
And we are coming to a close in our interview, but we'd be remiss not to discuss this. With everything that's happened to the state of North Carolina with HB2 and how, the safety and rights of LGBTQ members have been really compromised and the stance that our city council, because this is also a local issue in which the stance that was taken against HB2 and with this recent HB 2.0, HB 142, in terms of kind of the stance that
this supposed repeal that does functionally nothing.
Yes, yes. And I think this is going to be a bigger conversation, but in terms of just kind of maybe dangling the string a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a segment of its own at some point.
I agree, and I think we will talk about that. But for the listeners out there, like, where does our city council stand on this?
That is an excellent question. I have a column out right now entitled Turncoats on the Asheville Blade, and like a lot of our opinion columns, I definitely take a stance on it, especially as a trans person.
Yeah.
I think the HB2 quote unquote repeal compromise was neither. That does not pass any solid analysis that any sort of journalist who is worth their salt would put it under. From the opinion side, it actually has made things more dangerous for trans people in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
It's already a pretty harsh state for trans people in a lot of ways. The Democrats, or at least the ones that voted for this, it's worth noting locally, two legislators from the state of Democrats voted for it, two to their credit vote against it, but gave up a very strong political position without a lot of leverage, depending with a number of outcomes that could have happened for not really much for a basketball tournament.
For a basketball
pretty much,
tournament.
Council. A lot of councilors have not made statements historically, with one or two exceptions. Council members have actually been pretty averse about doing any real actions in LGBT rights.
Sure.
You get a lot of lip service, but not much else. And I go into that in this piece, like specifically what that has looked like. But a lot of councilors have not issued a statement on this. But Asheville's mayor has, and she uttered the word that she had applauded this bill, which that's, in my opinion, that's ridiculous. And I think it kind of indicates that, sadly, for Mayor Manheimer, and sadly, given some lack of actions, almost as much as any actions they've taken, though those have been somewhat limited in scope too, I think it does indicate that there is a mentality among some of our city leaders that sees LGBT rights as absolutely expendable.
Yeah.
That when it comes down to it, this is not a priority for them. It is not where they will fight. And it is. Saying that you applaud something, a bill that was condemned by every civil rights and LGBT group across the board, whatever their other disagreements or differences in policy, condemned
by ACLU,
by labor groups, every single kind of group you can imagine was engaged in over their very specific warnings. The NAACP called it an insult to civil rights. Mm-hmm. To say you applaud something like that is despicable. And honestly, I think this is my personal opinion, of course, but I think it reflects a lot of what you're seeing from a lot of Ashevillians, from the LGBT community. I think our mayor should be ashamed. And frankly, I think any member of council who is uncomfortable with that stance, and they all dang well should be, should push to do what they should have done a long time ago, which is pass a non-discrimination ordinance in defiance of HB2, in defiance of this, whitewashing of HB2 that's kind of come along recently, or this, revamp of HB2, which essentially keeps a lot of the same things in place. Prepare to defend it in court, and if the mayor objects, pass it over her objections. If our city attorney, who's taken some pretty far right-wing stances on this issue, objects, overrule her objections, ignore them. She works for council. But basically, this needs to go forward.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that in more detail another time.
Let's,
that's a huge issue.
Definitely
but that's worth it's worth for the listeners knowing. And like with a lot of things, like a lot of issues, a lot of what happens with city council doesn't necessarily happen at formal council meetings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, as always, David, thank you so much for joining us today for the city council report. And this is, again, News Team correspondent Gary Leonard. And for the listeners out there who want to read more about what's going on the city level, where can they go?
AshevilleBlade.com.
Thank you so much. Now David and I are going to go into closed session.